You are listening to the Badass Lady Folk of Brooklyn on Radio Free Brooklyn. That was Talking Hands by Toxic Moxie. I'm Christine Stoddard.
And I'm Rose Reed.
And today we are very honored to have Tuke Edelo today.
Hi.
Hey. Tuke grew up in Brooklyn. She studied theater and the arts growing up, and now she's some weirdo, self-described weirdo performance artist and anarcho-matriarchal communist. She dropped out of college, hitchhiked, train-hopped, all around with Occupy Wall Street, occupations all over the country, and after that, she moved to a commune in Virginia. She's directed and writes plays, performs political art, stand-up comedy, makes videos, has a Radio Free Brooklyn show of her own that's called What Would Save the World, and she enjoys building community and mutual aid. Hey,
so
tell us all about the different, I guess let's start off with Radio Free Brooklyn, since this is a Radio Free Brooklyn show. How did you get involved?
My friend Fritz Donnelly used to have a show with Radio Free Brooklyn, and we used to do this performance art with Matthew Silver and Parks. And Matthew Silver is this other performance artist. And I always saw Fritz interviewing people for this radio show. And I was like, I want a radio show. How do I get a radio show? And I initially actually thought it was super hard to get a show on Radio Free Brooklyn. People, you should submit to Radio Free Brooklyn. It's a lot of fun. But I initially thought it was going to be really difficult to get a show. And I was like, oh my God, I have to submit and I have to write it really well. And then there was like, I forgot about it. And they sent me like months later, like, you can have a show. And I was like, wow, it was super exciting. Yeah, and I turned out other people I knew had shows. And like a lot of people, the thing that's great about RFB is people from all around the city, I know from different art scenes and stuff, have latched on to this project and have their own show, and that's really cool. And I'm really happy to have my show. It's called What Would Save the World. It's on Wednesdays from 3 to 4 p.m. And we talk about varying things. Almost anything that you can think would be something you should consider in answering that question is appropriate for my show. And I feel like there's a lot of things relevant to the answer to that question, if there is one.
Yeah.
Or so as many.
How did you come up with that concept?
I used to live in this commune, which I'm sure we'll probably talk at least somewhat about that, but it was, I was actually visiting there, and one of the people who was, like, an intern there, who wasn't, like, lived there full time, was just visiting for a certain amount of time, was telling me about somebody's hierarchy of needs. I forget who wrote it, but
Maslow,
mm-hmm. And she was talking, I told her about this idea, and she was like, she always described the communes and people who were activists as people trying to save the world. Or she's like, we're trying to figure out how we're going to save the world. So I was like, what would save the world? Like, so I got the idea from her. And she's amazing. She talks about, like, prison justice. And, like, she's like, well, I'm going to create my own version of what a prison should look like. So I was like, I really like you. I'm going to use parts of your mind for my stuff.
So what are you trying to do with your show?
I'm trying to figure out what the answer to that question is. Kind of, like, it's sort of like a personal project, in addition to a you can listen to this and hopefully grow along with it. Like, it's developed. Like, I've invited people who are, like, seriously involved, like, investigative journalists, to people who kind of know who I know are interested in politics, want to talk about it, people who are just, like, fucking angry about... I can curse somebody.
Curse here.
Yeah, and this girl, Brittany Palmer-Wallace, she was on my show the other week, and she's an artist, so I think that's valid. I mean, pretty much, like, anybody could go on, but she just wanted to talk about the rise in discrimination since Trump, and I thought that was, like, totally valid. And then she thought she had to cancel, so I got this other guy I knew from high school who's, like, a libertarian, but he's not, like, a bro-libertarian, so I really, and I didn't realize...
Alt-libertarian.
It was an alt-libertarian, yeah. I didn't realize what he was gonna be, that he was gonna be, like, as intelligent as he was. No offense, Robert. I just remember, like, having... So I was like, oh, this guy will do it. Like, we'll talk about his student activist stuff. Like, it'll be cool. Like, it'll work. But then she could do it, too. And then I just decided to just have them both on there. And it was, like, the most interesting conversation. He, like, confessed his male privilege. It was fucking wild. It was weird. But and then, I don't know. I like inviting two different people who just want to talk about he wanted to talk about, like, education, and she wanted to talk about discrimination, and just sort of became, like, the same conversation. So I value that, bringing on different different people who have different topics they want to talk about and just seeing what they think about each other's topics and really playing with ideas and, like, because there's so many answers to that question.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's so many answers to that question. And I don't think there really is one answer, so it's kind of, like, funny that that's even the title of my show, because there's not really, like, it's the answer is just more questions.
It's like your journey of learning, asking.
Yeah. I would love to have an episode where, like, the rule is we can only ask questions. I'm going to try that in the next episode.
Maslow's hierarchy.
Let's only ask questions as our show. Oh, well, do you think it would make it this way? Well, actually, I think that would make it a little coercive, actually. That's why people always want to talk about coerciveness with me. I don't know, like, a certain anarchist always just want to be like, that's coercive.
Well, how did you get interested in politics in the first place?
I have no idea.
Oh, come on. You
know,
I did these communes, activist art.
Or do you have an experience when you were little that, like, sparked, like, this feeling?
Probably. I mean, I grew up in New York City, and whereas classism more obvious.
Yeah.
You know, like,
good question.
Like, I mean, I don't know. I've probably haven't been
put
there.
That on
I
your
haven't
show.
Really been that far out of the city. I was raised somewhat middle class in New York City.
And in, like, Brooklyn.
In Brooklyn. And in Brooklyn, like, you know what Brooklyn's like. You walk two blocks, like, you're in, it feels like definitely some weird, like, silent form of segregation.
Did you feel that way? You grew up in Carroll Gardens?
Yeah, but I went to a very, I went to a school that was, like, nearby that was, like, had, like, a rainbow program and was starting to get better funding, but it was probably because of, like, gentrification in the area. Mm-hmm. So it was very, it's very weird how all that stuff plays out in terms of, like, boundaries and districts. And, like, there's definitely, like, that's, like, where it's very clear that there's systemic, like, racism and class intersection and all that.
So it sounds like you were super aware of classism even
but
as a
didn't,
kid.
But I didn't, I think I was, now I'm, like, talking about,
I mean, you,
like,
give it a vocabulary now, but
I think I kind of, like, got it and, like, saw, like homeless people, and I never liked, and my aunt was like, oh, she always was thinking about people. Like, that's what I was like when I was a kid, so I don't really know. So I guess it just kind of developed into this thing. I remember, like, being in high school, and we were learning about Confucius, like, proverbs, and I was like, those are also sexist. I was so dorky. I was like, that's so sexist. Like, guys, Harry, oh my god, if you see how sexist that is? And, like, nobody wanted to talk to me.
So do you identify as a feminist?
Of course, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Sorry, I didn't come out of that. To a degree, I'm probably, like, I definitely, like, think that, like, feminism is, like, something I call myself, but I understand why certain people would rather call themselves, like, womanists, or, like, don't want to associate with certain aspects of feminism, and I find that very valid right now. I'm so confused on the feminist thing right now, honestly. Like, I'm definitely, like, a feminist and have my feminist theories, but I'm not so clear on what happened with Hillary versus Bernie, as much as I wanted Bernie, and then I was like, okay, I don't know, I have mixed feelings about, I don't really know what I'm saying, so let's move on.
All right.
Unless you want to ask me about that.
Well, but. No, well, on the political questions, I would love to know how you started these Trump therapy workshops at Tarot
Trump
Society.
Therapy.
Yeah, like, first explain what the heck those are.
Okay, so at Tarot Society, which is at 4 Charles Place, it's behind Little Skips, if you know where that is. It's, like, right in that little walkway. My friend Darcy, she's a tarot reader. She's mostly a palm reader, actually, but she runs that space with her husband, Kevin. And we were talking about how trauma is so prevalent. She actually came on What Would Save the World, and we talked about how it affects everything. And that's actually one of the answers I've been getting from What Would Save the World, is that almost any topic you look into, almost you just find tons and tons of trauma, like, at the core of the problem. Like, in the way people are talking to each other. And that's what I'm talking about when I say there's a lot of things about the feminist stuff I don't get, is there's, like, a lot of trauma going on there, and a lot of people don't know how to deal with that trauma. You know, like, I feel like there's a lot of, like, women communicating with men, or, like, people who are femmes, or like identify with the feminine, like, fighting with this concept of the masculine. I don't think that those actually attach to gender. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
So, trauma. So we're talking about trauma and how traumatized people are, and especially, like, now with all this crazy Trump shit, how much people are hurting, and it's nice to just like have a support system on something. Like, I'm not a professional by any means, you know. I did some training on the commune of different kinds of conflict resolution and transparency tools, which is just like a tool to open yourself up to people. We do some of those in the trauma healing group, but a lot of it really is just like almost like a buddy system. Mm. Like today, actually, it was just me and this one other person. The other people, I think they partied too late. They're like, we can't make it today. But we just like hung out and like talked ideas and drank tea and like gave each other like advice on different ideas. And it was nice. And it's really nice to have that. And we like talked about maybe trying to have other people come, maybe doing like field trips together, like being conscious friends and stuff. I feel like people need that right now. Like, at least that's the vibe I'm getting. Like, a lot of people are really upset. And it's really, like, good that people are waking up to this kind of thing a little more, but it's kind of, like, shitty that, like, Trump was, like, the catalyst.
We needed, like, an orange, like, Pete. What are those little, like, Easter candies?
Oh, Peeps, yeah.
Yeah, to, like, wake us up. Or, like, it's, like, dialogue.
Yeah.
Definitely. Like, we all knew this was, like, being suppressed. We all understood, like, oh, having a black man in the presidency was, like, you know, so threatening to people for some reason. Yeah. And now, like, now with Trump's, now that we elected, like, a dictator and, like, he's putting all of his Voldemort buddies, like, and the highest
I don't think he's going to really get away with it. I don't think there are really enough white supremacists.
I think there are enough middle class people who are disenfranchised.
White supremacists. That's what I mean, honestly, maybe I'm just like crazy and from New York, but like I hear a lot of those people talk and I'm like, oh my God, you like have a mental illness of white supremacy. Like there's something wrong with you. And then it's kind of fucked up because I don't know why. Something I'm thinking about a lot is like, I feel very reactionary and angry at people who think this way. Like, it's like, I understand if you feel output. And I understand that classism affects all kinds of people. And I understand that, like, yo, you need a job. Like, you need something. Like, or we need to have better programs or something. Right. We didn't work it out. Like, I understand feeling that way. Beyond. But, like...
Yeah. But.
Like, I think that homophobia is a mental illness. I really do. I think homophobia, racism... And the thing that's so fucked about it is I feel so mad at these people. But it's like, no, like, you are actually... Like, you think that what other people do in their bedroom affects you. Like, that's, like, crazy. So
like, I know, it really... because, like, everyone's doing fucked up shit in their bedroom.
Like, yeah. Or you're not. Sex toys, I'm sorry. Yeah.
Even or the you're principal not, at your school, the buddy you drive to school.
Yeah, like, so it's
you
like, know, what the fuck, like...
Bus driver, whatever.
And, like, race, like, oh my God. People always want to be like... Whenever I throw, like, Black Lives Matter statistics at people, they always just want to be like, oh, yeah. And they send me this, like, ridiculous, like... I'm like, how did you extrapolate that from that number? What are you even, like, what? So these people have, like, literally tricked themselves into thinking that white people are victims. And, like, yes, everybody has victim things, but it's mind-blowing. So what it is I don't know how to discuss with these kinds of people, like, how do we treat them as if they are mentally ill? Yeah. How do you treat bigots? Like not just one-on-one, like, treat, like, how do you treat them? Like, how, like, you know, like, if I have depression, like, maybe I need to eat better, or maybe I need more exercise, maybe I need to have some better friends, maybe I need therapy, maybe I need medication, maybe I need, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
How do you treat bigotry?
Socialism and questions. I mean, the funny thing to me is, like, they're voting for change, they're voting for opportunity, they want FDR shit, so vote for it.
They want FDR shit, but they're voting for the other side. It's like, Becky, I don't understand, because... It's, oh, God. Some people were so burning they voted for Trump.
Yeah.
Because Trump kind of did this subtle thing where he took on a lot of Bernie talk. Like, he was like, the election's rigged. And, like, I clearly it was for you, bro. But, I mean, I don't know. I didn't even want Hillary. I didn't want any of them. I hate them all.
But it sounds like this has really empowered you.
But I mean, I always thought like this, and we were gonna have the workshops anyway. Yeah, so it was an idea before that, but then we were like, oh shit, like, yeah, now we really need it. And now we're talking about maybe having like food giveaways on those days, like trying to like maybe the trauma group like makes food together and talks about what their week was like.
Yeah,
and then, you know, it cooks food while doing that, and then anybody can like show up and eat, you know, just like. I don't know, like, more giving, more openness to a degree. And that's what I was talking about today with my friend, even at the group. We were just like, so how do we have an open space? Like, how do you deal with problematic people? Like, this is the thing that I can't get out of what would save the world. Is like, I don't know how. And that's the question I'm really asking. Like, what do we do about bigots? Like, maybe I should change the name of my show. What do we do about bigots?
The name of the show. Let's travel back in time to when you lived in Virginia.
Oh, okay.
Like, what did you observe about racism and homophobia living in central Virginia?
I didn't leave the commune enough to really know.
Yeah,
to be honest with you, in that in Virginia, there is such a... Oh, I don't want to... Did you already say the name of the commune?
No.
Yeah, don't say it.
Okay.
shit.
Could you describe it?
I can describe it. So there's this area in the country where there's, like, a ton of communes. There's, like, two states in the country where there's just tons of communes. Not tons, but, like, a significant amount.
Surprisingly.
And where I live, there was, like, 4 communes. Mm-hmm. And then there's... But some of that literally means there's, like, 5 people living in a house.
Yeah.
And they have a garden and they run a business together and they share the money. Maybe they're not related. Maybe they are.
But they're all within 2 hours of each other. Yeah. There's just this little bubble. Not even that. Like, an hour and a half.
It's amazing. But there's other ones that are... there's other ones that are, like, 3 hours away. Mine had about 40 people. We had a couple different residences and an office building. We ran an agricultural business that supported all of us. It was actually a pretty successful business. The thing that's weird about these communes is they're kind of like communist on the inside. Like inside, like there's no money. Everybody's pretty much fucking equal. Like there's no leader. Like there's some people who have different roles. Like, but it's a consensed upon role if somebody bothered. Usually, like, okay, so sometimes there are certain people who take on certain roles just naturally, who, like, do more of the work for the business, and then other people who do more of the work in the kitchen. So it's, like, mm-hmm. they're kind of, like, if you want to just be in the kitchen, you might ask them questions about it. Or, like, and some of these jobs are harder than others, for some people just think that. But yeah. an hour is an hour. So, like, you work an hour, you've done an hour of work, and that, if you do a certain amount a week, and then you're good. Everybody has to work that amount of hours. And if I had, like, a role and someone was like, you shouldn't be the only one doing that. Like, maybe they bring it to a meeting and we talk about it. But people don't usually challenge that kind of thing because they're usually happy with what they got. Yeah. It's kind of like you get to decide when you get there what you're going to try to do. So you asked me to describe, like, what it looks like. So there's, like, hey, there's a couple houses and there's, like, a path. It's, like, you drive in and there's usually, like, a couple houses. There's, like, a path and woods and more houses.
Yeah, like on a little farm.
It's a farm. It's basically a farm. That's the thing. Like, I don't actually think communes are as, like, whenever I say I live in a commune, people are like, whoa. I'm like, yeah, it's kind of crazy that I didn't leave those communities. Like, most of my socializing was within there. And then there are people who live in the surrounding areas who are friends of people who live there or have visited at some point. And then there's people all over the... It's actually beautiful. There's people all over the goddamn country who are part of communes or part of the extended community of such. And there are urban communes in New York City. There's a huge communities movement, and that's who most people I hung out with. So it was hard for me to acknowledge a lot of any, like, weird bigotry going on. And the communities around us kind of liked us because we, like, buy stuff from their local stores and, you know, we're kind of a lot of people, so if we buy something, it's usually, like, a lot.
Yeah.
You know, so they're happy. Remember we went to this fabric store once and, like, we made a decision in the meeting that we could spend a certain amount of money on fabric. So we all went and just, like, bought a ton of fabric and they were, like, so happy. It's, like, small town fabric store. They're like, they're really good customers. Let's give them an extra yard of this one. You know, they, like, wanted us to... So I guess money, like, gets rid of bigotry to a point. It's so fucked up, like, that you could, like, pay someone to pretend not to be homophobic for 5 minutes. It's weird. But they were actually good, though, actually, that people who ran that store. So I feel like maybe that area that we were in was, like, probably had conservative people, but, mm-hmm. like, there were enough. We probably actually made that area somewhat liberal-ish. Like, you could be probably gay in that area because, like, I don't know, maybe there's more of a culture of, like, you have to deal with that to make money, because the damn hippies.
You want the hippies to shop at your general store.
You want the damn hippie money. Yeah, it's ridiculous. Yeah, I don't know. You want to talk more about what it looked like?
Yeah, what kind of...
Like, what do you want to know?
What kind of art did you... Because you are a visual and a performing artist, so what did you make on the commune?
Well, I can tell you what my friend made real quick, just because it's really cool.
Sure.
He learned how to do carpentry, and he built this whole, like, gorgeous, like, spiral staircase going up to one of the top, the second floors of a building, so now you can just go in. Instead of being like, there's a lot... Okay, so what I can tell you about living in one of these places is, like, you're literally living dorm style with, like, sometimes in a building with, like, quite a few people, you know? So, or if you're not that many people, like, you have to go through an office downstairs to go upstairs to your room, and there's an office downstairs, or there's somebody, like, working downstairs, you know, so making food or playing music. So you're, like, always around people. Sometimes you're like, I just want to go to my goddamn room. I don't want to walk through here and have someone ask me about the garden, or, like, you know, tell me that, like, they need help cleaning this thing, or ask me, like, I don't want to do that. I just want to go to my room. So walking up the staircase is great. But he made it was gorgeous. I used to paint. I painted on drywall a lot because we'd have leftover drywall, and I just would paint. They're still, like, I need to go down there. They're probably mad at me. I have, like, a bunch of just, like, paintings, like, in a storage cabinet that I left there because I just had too much. I couldn't take I got to go down there. But I painted a lot. There's definitely a culture in certain spaces in those kinds of places where people draw on the walls. There's usually the smoker's area, honestly. Oh, and we only could smoke in one area because there's this disease you can get from smoking cigarettes that's called tobacco mosaic virus, and, like, your garden can get it, and, like, if you grow tomatoes or peppers, it's really bad.
Could you describe your paintings? I saw a few online, and they're beautiful. Really.
Thank you.
Really psychedelic.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I did a lot of acid in my youth. Like, dude, I fucking moved to a commune. I mean, I paint, like, aliens and, like, third eyes, and, like, I like to call them, I like to do this thing in my performance art. I always say, open your third eye, no, really open up your fourth eye to feminism. I'm talking about, you know, vaginas, but it's also that I'm also, like, but not all women have vaginas. Like, I always, like, I PC the fuck out of, like performance art, and people don't know that I'm being serious sometimes. Like that I'm actually serious. Like, yes, 100%. Like, open your fourth eye, but, like, also, like, girls might not have a vagina. Like, deal with it. yeah, like, it's funny when people, like, don't know that I'm, like,
parentheses sincere.
I should have assured that said I'm sincere in parentheses.
Well, so why were you painting aliens and eyes and...
I have no fucking idea, but I think some people have, like, analyzed my art, but usually, like, bros at, like, bars, like, you know, who, like, are trying to, like, get something out of me, so I don't know if I trust this, but it's something like, oh, like, it seems like since your paintings are kind of, like, ugly pretty, like, there's something that you, like, don't like about yourself, but you kind of like it. Because I used to paint them very demonic. They started off as being very demonic and weird looking, and they got prettier and prettier and prettier. So I think there's definitely some, like, self-esteem timeline going on there. And I do feel like they're a little bit of a, like, an alter ego kind of thing. Like, feeling like, I feel like a lot of people feel really alienated or really rejected. And when I was a child, I was bullied a lot. So I think that's definitely, like, comes with the trauma healing thing, like, wanting to be, like, it's all right, guys, like, we can love each other, you know, it's all right, and, like, bullying aliens. Oh, yeah, so people, I feel like a lot of people feel like outsiders, and I think I was painting, like, the outsider, and also, like, a lot of times, like, looking at what I think is really, like, screwed up about the world and wishing I was born on another planet, or, like, wishing I wasn't really part of it, like, being, like, oh, like, I'm from somewhere else, I'm an alien, I'm not from here, like, I wouldn't do this shit. But then, you know, the older I get, the more I'm like, oh, I'm kind of just like everybody else, like, we're all kind of screwy a little bit, we should work on ourselves.
I think your focus on bodies and, like, color is very sensual and almost dreamlike. That's my interpretation.
Yeah, I do think it's escapist. That's what I think. Mm. I think it's a little... I haven't been painting as much. I've been writing more, actually. Mm. I've been writing about... I'm also a stripper, so I've been writing, like, this, like, episode... I didn't put it in there, but I don't care. I did this, like, episodic thing where it's, like, stripping and then communes and, like, them juxtaposed to each other. Like, the juxtaposition is very weird. But,
Can you describe it?
Well, like, okay, so, like, living on a hyper-feminist commune where there's extreme consent rules and then working in a strip club where, like, which is, like, an underground Craigslist strip club.
Oh, hey.
I'm a fucking anarcho-matriarchal communist. Yeah. So basically, I say in my stand-up that I'm like a Robin Clitoral Hood. Like, I like am like basically like taking money from these like Wall Street bros for like. I'm like, boom, boom, boom. Like, I can be very detached. I can be very detached from my body. So I think that's interesting, too, with to analyze the paintings, because they're so dreamlike, and then being able to detach from my body in the way that I do. I wonder, is the connection there, like, this strong desire to not be on Earth, or not be connected to the physical reality on some level. Like, definitely, like, a fantasy thing, which is, like, definitely something I criticize in other people. That's funny. No, I criticize that in other people, I think, because, like, I notice people have that. I notice a lot of stuff, like, in activism, or people who think like me, or people who think, like, let's fix this, let's da-da-da, like, people who think, like, that definitely had, like, this tendency to go towards, like, messiah complex, or, like, leader thing, and I think I notice it a lot more the older I get with other people, and I think that, like, I've definitely, like, gotten better at being, like, this isn't about you. Do you know what I mean? Like, just trying to curb that. I feel like a lot of people have it, like, this desire to, like, be the best, or, like,
especially in New York, right?
Especially in New York, yeah. I grew up here, so I feel like I'm very conscious. Like, that's something I weigh a lot of, like, in What Would Save the World. I'm like, is this more based in ego, or is it based more in actually, like, mutual aid, or a progress of some kind, where the reward is not for me, but the reward is for everyone to have something. Like, that's what I don't like about capitalism. And I think that I can talk theoretically about capitalism and communism, and there's all these everybody like, but this reality. And I'm sure they're right about a lot of that. But I think that communism is like people who have decided consciously that money for themselves, or like luxuries for themselves, is less important than everybody having their needs met. And everybody, you know, obviously there's like a variety of needs. There's like basic needs, and then there's, you know, I feel like I need weed. You know, I don't really need weed. But like, if somebody else told me they needed weed, like, maybe we would try to help each other get weed. Or if somebody needed something that I don't need, but they need, in my mind, I would, like, think about, like, how to, I don't know, it just, like, the reward is that everybody getting to get what they need. That's what I wish people could think the reward is. So, rather than their own luxuries. Am I making sense?
Yeah, yeah. So do you bring some of those ideas into your art? Like the Barbara Streisand.
Oh my god, you read about that?
Yeah.
Oh my god.
What is that?
Oh my god, what the hell is that? Oh, that's a whole other thing. How do I bring that in?
Is there a communist?
Yeah, actually, yes, there absolutely
first,
is.
Tell us what it is.
Okay, so I used to do, what time is it? Okay. I used to make sure I have enough time. Okay, I used to do a Barbara Streisand burlesque act where I would dress up as a yeshiva boy, and I'm Jewish, so I can do this. This is acceptable. I am Jewish. Although
I like the asterisks there.
Although I did have like a bro Jew spiritual messiah complex motherfucker. He was like, you just don't look Jewish enough to do that act.
And that's a compliment if I ever heard one.
No,
I mean, that's a motherfucker if I ever heard one.
Oh yeah. I told him that he is the only Jewish person who's ever had a problem with my act. Jewish women love it, actually. That's the thing. Jewish women love... Actually, I fuck with him. I go... I wear Jewish stars on my boobs. And he was like, that's a bit too far. And I was like, my tits are holy as fuck. So, yeah. So basically, I would dress as a yeshiva boy, a Barbara Streisand, and play a Yentl song and take it off and reveal that I'm a girl. And I would read, like... I had, like, a Barbara Streisand Torah... it was like, Barbara Streisand smashed the patriarchy, Barbara Streisand smashed the patriarchy with her chutzpah, she made, and it was just super weird.
Keep going. Don't stop.
She made a film called Yentl about a girl who must dress as a boy in order to learn, and then I changed the last three lyrics a bunch of times, but like one of them was like, why are we obsessed with everybody being the same, or then I am a rebellious Jewish woman. An outspoken Jew, my name is Barbara Bitch, and I am a rebellious Jewish woman, Streisand. Have you been, you know, Faraday? So it's ridiculous. So I would do that. My God, I haven't done this act in like forever. People are always like, why don't you do Barbara anymore? I'm like, because I don't want to be attached to Barbara all the time. And I don't even like do her accent that well. I just do like
everything. How long were you doing it though?
Because I did it.
The answer is not long enough.
There are so many write ups. You're so young. How old are you? 23? 24? 20? Yeah.
I don't know that anybody wrote
that. There was a lot of stuff about this Barbara Streisand. I probably did all of it. That was not just you.
Really?
It was not just your blog post.
I don't know. I mean, I'm crazy though. I'm like Instagram. You probably had people who are my friends posting it. Who like? Oh, but anyway, I don't know. But then the way it connects to communism is I connected to Tikkun Olam, which means to repair the world, which is like a Jewish mysticism thing, Kabbalah-esque, but to repair. Then straight up, like, if you're gonna like look into any modern religion and look past all its like bigotry bullshit, you will find the idea of mitzvahs, which is like mitzvah or whatever, mitzvah, blah, 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 blah. where you do good deeds. And that's pretty much what I was describing. I mean, it's basic, you know, do good deeds, repair the world, like, and you'll find that not in Judaism, you'll find that in Christianity, you'll find that in Muslims or Islam or whatever, you'll find it definitely in paganism, or certain kinds of paganism. Yeah, it's just everywhere. It's pretty, and that's how it connects to the Jewish thing, because I would talk about that in my act. I would sometimes like talk in, I had an extended version and developed like for a little while it was like one song, then I would extend it to like doing where is it written what it is I'm meant to be, and in between reading like quotes from the Bible or the Talmud or whatever I can find that were sexist and like freaking out about them, being like, that's ridiculous, that is, I, you know, I can't remember what I would say, but, yeah, connected to communism, for sure, in that way.
Yeah. What kind of performance art are you doing now?
I perform at Circus of Dreams almost every month. That's at Bazaar Bar.
What is that?
My head feels really weird right now. Oh, my God.
You okay? You need a break?
I just quit smoking, so I probably feel really weird. I'm sorry if this is going to make your interview weird.
It's like, that's all right.
I actually felt totally weird for a minute. So performance art, I...
No, the circus thing. What's that?
Circus. Oh, my God. Sorry, I feel, like, really weird right now. Circus of Dreams is at a Bazaar Bar. It's a bar on Jefferson Street. Or is it it's right off the Myrtle Broadway, and it's a performance art show. It's very avant-garde. It was started by Matthew Silver, who's a performance art... If you Google him, you'll find him. Just Matthew Silver. And he does really wild art where he just, like, he kind of looks like Jesus. He would be like, love each other. He was like, but most recently I did an act where I had a balloon on my foot. And I had, like, this voice was my voice. But I was like, I'm a man on, I'm coming in from Skype. I'm the shaman of whatever, whatever. It talked about machine elves and like all this different like LSD psychedelic like folklore stuff that like bros talk about, and like I was like, I have this balloon on my foot, but I kept calling it a fungus and being like, oh, it's a fungus on my foot, I need to cut it off. He's like, you can't cut it off, because you have to respect all life. And like, it was kind of like about abortion, but it was also about like bigotry and how do we cut it off without it was like challenging a lot of different, and then at the end I just like died. Yeah. Okay, so let's be real. I'm a hypochondriac, everybody. I am like the hippy dippy hypochondriac. The reason why I can't live on communes and shit anymore is because I'm crazy. That's the hardest thing about living on communes is figuring out how to live with other people like that. Like, that's not something that you grow up with, and really in this day and age, like you grow up with maybe brothers and sisters and your nuclear family, and that's cool and everything. Like, I like nuclear families, but I live with roommates now. But I was always like, what if I'm sick? Like, what if I, like, what if I have something on my hands and somebody eats what I make and then they get sick and it's all my fault and I started the epidemic of my commune.
Do you have brothers and sisters?
I don't. I'm an only child.
What? So, oh, my God. So adjusting to commune life.
I mean, I always wanted that. I always wanted siblings.
Yeah, the privacy issue is hard.
The privacy issue is not hard. I just got really paranoid, because when I was down there, and this is actually a big part of the trauma stuff, some guy Okay, so please, people who are listening, don't judge communes based on this. Like, this rarely happens that I'm about to tell you. Like, this guy tried to burn down the house. This, like, crazy visitor who was, like, very, very, very mentally ill, like, schizophrenic. Like, I hope he is getting help. He's in jail, but I hope.
Yeah, yeah.
Something, like, I feel bad for the guy. He's nuts. But he tried to light my house on fire in the middle of the night. And I am still, like, so fucking freaked out by that, and I had to leave because it, after a couple months after that, because I just couldn't, kind of fucked up my head, and that's why I get hypochondria like that. Like, if something happens like that, I'm like, oh my god, like, what if something drastically wrong happens, you know?
Yeah.
I'm very, and that's why I have the trauma, so I'm hoping that through that, like, that's what I said in the event that I made for it. I was like, look, I'm not qualified, I'm not, like, a therapist or anything. I have some credentials about, like I said before, the conflict resolution stuff. I love community, but, like, I want to facilitate or, like, organize it, but I don't want to lead. Like, that's what I told my friend who was there today. I was like, look, if you have any ideas and you want to, like, host the group one day, like, I'll be here and I'll take over if you don't want to do it, but, like...
It sounds like a triggered, like, survivor mode, which, like, still hasn't gone away, which is exhausting.
My I'm totally in, like, survivor mode all the time. I'm, like, totally in, like, what's going on? I'm very protective of people. Like, I get very, like, I was hosting an event recently, and, like, something weird happened with, like, staff and, like, something, and I got very protective of, like, certain ways of thinking. I got very involved.
So how did you transition from commune life to apartment life?
Commune life to apartment life. I mean, I grew up in New York.
Yeah.
It's, like... Let's get back into the swing of it, you know? It's just... I mean, I have a pretty easy life, honestly. Like, I work as a stripper, like, twice a week, and then just, like, make art. And then, like, experience hypochondria, and then, like, try to organize different things. Like, I'm directing my friend's music video. I don't like to work with money. I don't like to work with money. That's why I want to make as much as I need to survive, and then move the fuck on. So... Yeah, I live in an apartment. It's, what's weird about it is, like, living in the commune, I could just go out my room and, like, know everybody around. Yeah. Even though sometimes you have strangers coming through. And that's why, that's another reason to live. It's like, why the fuck is there, like, strangers in my living room? And people are like, because we need new members soon. Or that person's really, they want to be here. And it's like, yeah, that's right. But they're, oh, like, I don't know them.
Yeah.
So that's hard. But I miss it and I don't. Like, I miss, like, being able to leave my room and having someone who probably really wants to talk to me. Like, they're on the commune for the first time. Like, can you imagine, like, if you were, like, young activist and you're like, I'm on this commune, I've been here a day, you've been living here for whatever, how's it going? What's up? Let's hang out. Like, what's this like? Like, they really want to be... Nobody's, like, in your house who, like, doesn't... Nobody's, like, visiting a commune doesn't want to fucking be there. At least for the first couple days. So, like, and usually there's somebody new there, like, every couple weeks or so. So it's, like, if I leave my room, people who already have a big thing in common with me, that they moved to a commune.
Yeah.
Or they decided to visit a commune. That's kind of a big thing. Not many people are like, yeah, I'm going to go look up a commune on the internet and go visit it. That's what you can do if you want to go to a commune. Look up FIC, Fellowship of Intentional Communities, and you'll find tons of different kinds of communes. Some of them I wouldn't call communes. I call them co-houses and should. And, like, I don't think it's a commune unless there is literally 100% income sharing. But you can call it a commune, and I'll be like, that's cool. Like, yeah, you get, like, your style of thinking, so I validate that. But, like, just the difference.
What else do you miss about commune life?
My fucking friends, like that. my people who think like that. Like, nobody moves to a commune who doesn't have some fucking crazy idea about how the whole world should change and be better. I don't agree with all of it, but, like, to have that intent in your head, it's great. Yeah, I miss that. A lot of people don't fucking think like that. A lot of people don't, and it's, like, it's definitely, like, a fucking sick wake-up call when I got back to New York, like, realizing that people don't think like that. Like, going to bars and, like, being like, hey, like, I just lived in a commune for a couple years. I don't even want you to touch my shoulder, like, for a little bit, because on communes, there's a really, it's a lot of communes, like, you don't touch people at all unless that you ask. Like, there are people, it's like, can I help you? I mean, you develop relationships with people, like, you know, like, a lot of people there would just run up and hug me. You know, that's okay, because we have that established boundary, or, like, it's just clear, like, between us. But, like, But even so, like, a lot of people won't just touch you if they don't know you, or they won't ask you, or if you just tell them you're not in the mood right now, they'll leave you alone. They're, like, used to it. Even if you're just like, hey, like, please don't, like, touch me right now. People will be like, okay. But people in New York take that as rude sometimes, or, like, men at bars, like, take that, like, super, like, or just, like, people, like, think that's really weird. And people were not very understanding of my desire to not be touched.
Yeah. So consent culture was a big thing.
Yeah, I used to do consent workshops there to buy for like new people because we realized it's becoming a problem. Because some people be like, don't understand like the very intense consent culture. Yeah. Yeah. Withdrawal's fun. So
was there anything else that you miss about the commune? Like, did you grow food there?
Or yeah. Oh my god, I miss the vegetables. I miss the vegetables so much. I cooked there. My main job was cooking, and I did phone service for the business, which is crazy. I'm not good at customer service. I don't know why I decided to do that. people actually told me when I came back to visit, I was like, "Do you want help with that?" And they were like, "Look, you weren't nice when you lived here on the phones." And I was like, oh, shit. And I was like, I don't have to, like, do it. And they were like, it's fine. Like,
how are you not nice?
Oh, my God. I'd be like, oh, I just didn't like it. I don't know why I was even doing it. I just wanted to, like,
hello, go the fuck away. Yeah, why are you calling?
It was stupid. I wasn't good at it. Yeah. But it's fine.
What about other things that you shared in the commune? Do you miss having, like, would you share clothes? Would you share?
Oh, we had a whole thing that was like, commie means like communal. Mm-hmm. So, like, if you like, say, like, I put like chips on the table, but like, these are commie, like, anybody can have these are commie. So we had a trailer that was like filled with clothes and like other rooms. We have like spaces that were called commie clothes where it's just a bunch of clothes, like. None of these are actually. I do have clothes. I have a commie clothes with me. I have a shirt that we, jacket we. What do you call that? Where you stencil something?
Screen printing.
Yeah. Yeah, we screen printed on this jacket that I got in commie clothes. Huh. I have it with me right now.
So, what was it like to transition from like a communist, commie communal lifestyle, commie, and then coming to New York and like. You know, putting your art first, like, putting your own, like, schedule together, like, putting your, like, priority.
Well, when I first moved back, I forgot about this part. I just, like, try to pretend like it doesn't exist. I moved to Staten Island and lived in, like, a collective house by one of the communes there, and it was, like, a disaster. And we fucked it up, and it was just bad.
How's that different from a commune, a collective house? Or it is the same?
You're not really sharing, like, you're kind of, like, living in it, like, it's like almost like living in an apartment.
It's just like having like, a roommate.
Yeah, or just like deciding this like intention to like live somewhat communally. Like, oh, like we're more than roommates. Like, but not, you know, like dating. We're more than roommates. But like maybe like you do projects together, maybe try to run a garden together, maybe you try to be eco-conscious as a house.
Like, but it's not income sharing.
Yeah. Maybe some level. Maybe there's like, you know, you're all in the same CSA or something.
How do you make money then? You still work a regular job?
Oh yeah, we worked a regular job.
Okay.
At that time.
Yeah, yeah.
Most communes that are like communes, they form a business of some kind. Mm-hmm. And the collective funds go to that, and usually there's some amount of like allowance for like or consensed upon allowance that everybody gets a little bit of every month. Like I got $75 a month for like luxuries or whatever, like if I wanted to buy some booze. You know, like, you know, but the community buys food, the community buys clothing if we need it. We usually get a lot of donations. People are like, we don't need this. Take the commies. Give them to the commies.
How was the Staten Island one a disaster? Was
yeah.
To you or disaster like in general?
The larger Staten Island commune there. So there's this large commune and we rented the house from this lady who lived there. And because they're different because they're like allowed to like own stuff and most of them have jobs. They have like businesses and they're called Ganes. Like I can say what they are. They're pretty open. No, they're pretty open. They're called Ganes. They live in Staten Island. They run these businesses called Everything Goes. They have secondhand furniture, secondhand clothes, and then like a book and a cafe. Sorry. And the cafe has performances and stuff. I recommend you go there if you ever go to Staten Island. Their businesses are actually super cool. And they have just a different structure that's like, you can either work in the business and live there for free and have a certain amount of allowance, like the commune, or, and there's like a core group that makes decisions about certain things. There's more of a hierarchy. That's really what it is.
It's so you didn't like that?
But I wasn't even really part of them. Like, I don't like that. Like, I wouldn't want to live in a commune that was run that way. But I lived in, like, a house where we were going to try to start our own commune within this lady's house. But, like, we were really messy and, like, just fucked it up. Like, it was, like, a shit show. And that was just, like, my biggest fail. Like, I just was not ready, I don't think.
Was there a fallout incident?
We just got really bad roaches and we got evicted.
Was everyone really young?
Yeah, everybody was really young. Everyone was really young and I don't know. I just think, like, we didn't know what we were doing. I'd never lived really on my own, not on a commune. Like, I moved from my parents to a commune. At some point, I lived in an apartment with my, like, abusive ex, and I was, like, 20. And then, oh, whatever, I don't care. He would get fucked. hopefully not. I hope he never comes again in his life. But he probably hasn't. So...
Oh god, I like the transparent part of this.
So he moved to
let's go back to Staten Island.
I lived with him, and that was when I was like living in an apartment before the moving to Staten Island, so I haven't really lived anywhere else until I moved to Staten Island. Yeah. You want to talk about Staten Island? So Staten Island, we tried to start this art collective. We were called the Fae Art Collective. We had a lot of, like, queer folk. Like, it was sort of like a safe house. But then it was just, like, a mess. And then it wasn't safe. Because, I mean, it was, like,
and then there were roaches.
It was just a fucking... And then I was, like, dating, having another unhealthy relationship. I got into healthy relationships. I'm luckily in a very healthy relationship right now, actually.
Congratulations.
Yeah, finally happened.
What makes it so different?
I don't expect anything from him, and he doesn't expect anything from me. I can fuck whoever I want, and so can he. We don't actually, though. That's the thing. Like, we can totally... Like, I'm polyamorous. Like, I like, am open to dating other people, but I just don't give a fuck at this point. I'm like, he's healthy. I don't need to, like, do this thing where I just get infatuated with people and chase them. I still do that, but then I usually don't want to have sex with them. I'm like, let's hang out. I actually, never mind. We'll just be friends. But,
what? Have you been polyamorous your whole adult life?
No.
No.
I don't like monogamy. Because, that's why I'm like, look, like, I'm probably only gonna fuck you for, like, a little bit, but I'm probably gonna fuck someone else in a relationship. And, like, don't date me if you don't like that. And you can do it too. Please go ahead. He doesn't want to either. He's like, oh, that's not my thing. But he knows that I do that. He knows, like, I have accepted, like, invitations for dates and stuff. Like, he knows, and actually not gone because it didn't work out. I'm just bad at making it happen. See, I don't care that much. So now more people want to date me.
Because you're aloof.
I'm like, distant.
It's a pheromone perfume power thing.
It's like, I don't need you.
I feel like this should go into the Barbara Act.
The Barbara Act. And I don't need you anyway. So I'm in a healthy relationship, and he's just nice. He's a nice person. I don't always date. I usually date very, very damaged people, and I'm sure he has his shit, but, like, he has his shit, but he doesn't, like, need me to fix his shit. Or he's not going to take out his shit on me, and I'm not going to do that to him either.
Cool.
Yeah. Has that changed your art at all? Like, going from...
Yeah, I haven't been painting at all.
You're just too happy to paint.
I've been writing, and he's a writer, too, so maybe that's, like, he's ripping off on me in that way. And then I organize shows a lot. Like, I'm doing a show on... I don't know when is this going to air, though.
December 17th.
Oh, fuck it. But, cool. Yeah, I host music shows and different shows sometimes. You should just look me up and go see them.
What are your regular shows?
Well, Circus of Dreams is usually the first Wednesday of the month. It's, starts at about 10, it's at the bar, but, like, people get there around 9. The party starts happening at 9, Circus of Dreams at Bizarre Bar. It's a funny show. Like, it's weird. It's a weird show. Like, you literally don't know what you're gonna see on stage. It could be fucking crazy, it could be somebody just kind of, like, singing a song, maybe dressed a little weird. Like, it could be ranging from that to what I described with the balloon bacteria thing. Or somebody, my friend Alexi Transparent, was dressed up as a vagina, and she's like, the pussy grabs back! and just like ranting about all these things that I don't even remember, which is all related to feminism and stuff.
Do you make all your costumes?
Usually. And well, I mean, I get stuff together and I paint stuff on things and I attach fabric with duct tape or sew it on. Yeah, I'm thrifty.
Are you big on trash art?
I used to be.
Yeah.
But then I had too much stuff. I could be a hoarder really easily if I wasn't careful.
For your costumes, though, where do you get everything? Thrift shops or what?
Thrift shops. Halloween Adventure is a great store. They give discounts if they know you work in certain kinds of theater, and they're very nice to the East Village community there. It's also, really terrible that I do this, but I sometimes buy from the Rainbow Store because they have really weird stuff. You know, Rainbow Store?
Yeah, and it's cheap.
It's the best dresses I ever
have. Yeah, it's the best. Yeah, I go there.
Are you working on a piece you can tell us about? Something in development?
I started thinking about... Oh my god, I had a thing, I was, on the way here, and was I should make art about that. I've been working on stand-up. I've been doing just straight stand-up, trying to figure out how to make my own voice show in the stories I want to write about my past when I was, hitchhiking and stuff around the country. So, I'm writing stand-up about that, and I'm writing, I told you about that, the juxtaposition between the stripping and the commune. So I'm working on that. That's, a long-term project where I'm trying to put a lot of things... that I'm writing to be relevant to that.
And it would look like a one-woman show?
I want to make it a TV show, honestly. I want to write, pilots. I've written, episodes. And I don't know what that could turn into.
And there'd be, multiple characters, that you're fictionalizing from your past? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Definitely that. Oh, I was going to make something about consumerism for Christmas. That's what I was going to make something about consumerism and assimilation.
Because you have a lot of thoughts on capitalism.
Yes. Yeah. I was gonna definitely try to do something about the Christmas season and how it's definitely about giving and remembering to be with family and all that stuff. And I love that. I love hanging out with my family. I would not miss the Christmas party that my Jewish family goes to ever. That's why I love going, because I love the people who are there. I just think that Christmas on a political and economic level has become very consumerist, very assimilationist, they try to, make Jewish stuff that's, Jewish gingerbread houses and weird shit. I think I could attach that to, the whiteness of America, and, I can attach that to all that stuff. I don't know what I'm gonna do with it yet, but I have to come up with some metaphor or some story to, show what it really looks like. With the, consumerism thing... With the abortion thing, it was what if there literally was bacteria growing on someone's foot and we told them we couldn't cut it off because that's a life? That's kind of what this abortion stuff sounds like. I understand people not liking the white abortion stuff, but get over it. Honestly, it's not you. I get that, but people not liking it, but too bad. But for a lot of pregnancy, it is just some cells.
Yeah, but it's, so it's really early, yeah.
Yeah, it's but even after, it's what? I don't remember being in the womb, do you? The fuck?
All right, backtracking a little bit, how is your stand-up different from your performance art?
It's just stand-up. I go up, I say some stuff, I try to sound ridiculous. The thing I don't like about stand-up is there's definitely, a really bro-y crowd to stand-up, and, a lot of people who just want to, not care about anything. I don't like apathy in stand-up, so I try to care a lot. I try to be oh, yeah, everybody, you moved to a commune, they're did you drink the Kool-Aid? I'm like, yes, I drank the Kool-Aid. I drank way too much of the fucking Kool-Aid. I drank so much and all the artificial flavorings, and it fucking, poisoned the earth, so I moved to a commune, obviously. I talk about, so I just, try to make it people can get it. Yeah.
Your consumerism Christmas special? Can we look for that somewhere?
Yeah, it'll probably be at Circus of Dreams.
So
the first of, I already did December. Probably the first of January. Maybe I can do it in January.
Post-Christmas.
Christmas
Apocalypse Redux.
Oh my god, it can be the winter fairy of the winter solstice coming to sing the song of the new year and talk about it. Donald Trump and all that stuff. Talk about Donald Trump, But I don't want to make it so obvious. I have to figure out, like, another way to talk about Donald Trump. It's not that I don't like to make it so apparent. I want people to be like, either like, this is fucking weird. I want people to be like, this is fucking weird. Or some people be like, oh, I get this. Or maybe people be like, what was that about? Like, if people didn't know what it was about, if they paid attention, they're going to think about what it's about. If it's obvious, they're like, oh, this is like this girl who doesn't like Donald Trump. You know, bro.
Where do you do your stand-up?
I like the Experimental Comedy Gallery. Oh, we're having a Fuck Trump, not convention, a Fuck Trump, comedy festival in January, like the week before the inauguration, and I'm going to bring in performance artists, so you probably could see that there, too!
Yeah, so tell us more about that. What's it going to be?
I mean, there's going to be probably a bunch of comedians, like, spewing lefty stuff, but, like, there's also going to be some
pretty obvious.
It's at a 272 Grand Street basement level. There's a lot of great open mics there. There's open mics literally, like, every day at, like, 6 or 6:30. And, like, then again at 10 p.m. And they're free. They're all free open mics. I mean, you should donate to them. It's a great space.
But. Do you invite anyone to your stripping, or is that completely detached?
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. That's, like, it's another life.
Okay.
Respect. So that's not related to the performance art at all?
I mean,
in a way.
It could go in at some point. Like, I could see myself referencing it or making a comment on, like, strip club culture. But, like, no, like, nobody comes see me strip. You have to be very, very rich for me to be like, yes, come. I have to be like, all right, like, I don't care if I know you. If you're going to pay me, like, a good chunk of money and come to my job, like, okay. But.
Noted.
Oh, darn.
But, like, if some bro was like, yo, I'll pay you for lap dance, or, like, yeah. Like, I feel like it would always be, like, some old Brooklyn guy. I feel like that's, like, exactly who, like, doesn't know about my club. It's, like, you know, guys from, like, Brooklyn, like, Italian guys from, like, from Sunset Park, like, they don't go to my club. It's all, like, Wall Street assholes.
Ew. Why?
Why is it all Wall Street? Because they want to feel special.
But why do they go to your weirdo club?
Because we're young and we look like girls next door, and they were the girls they see on the subway, and they're like, damn, I just want to, like, you know, like, be with a 20-something for, like, a couple hours and have them actually think I'm cool. It's like, I don't think they're cool. They know I think they're an asshole. Like, well, so sometimes they love it, though. They talked to this neocon guy who agreed with me on literally every single issue I brought up. And I'm like, then why the fuck did you vote for Trump? And he, like, gave me his card and was like, tell me about your show. Like, email me. It's fucking stupid.
Really, really quickly, what is the weirdest customer experience you've had as a stripper?
Oh my God, why do you ask me that?
That's a long story.
I'll give you a quick one.
Yeah.
I sang Jewish hymns, or like what a Jewish song is, into this guy from Israel's ear, and he thought it was really sexy. And the other day, I don't know, occasionally they're doing like cocaine like in the bathroom and then coming in and asking me. I don't know. That's not the weirdest. I can't think of it. I'm sorry.
Tuke, always be performing. Always.
Yeah, always.
Well, thank you
so much for coming on to our show.
That was a great show. That was fun.
Your honesty on every topic is inspiring and hilarious.
Thank you.
Yeah, definitely both of those things. You've been listening to the Badass Lady Folk of Brooklyn on Radio Free Brooklyn. I'm Christine Stoddard.
I'm Rose Reed.
Please tune in next week.